Session number 12241, Mr. William Laverick, reel 10.
Mr. Laverick, reel 10. We're talking about your time at Hardwick Camp. One thing you mentioned off the tape was that was a particular person who wasn't particularly suited to army life and how you dealt with him.
Yes, that's right enough. We used to go and meet the civilians from the train. It was our job to sort them out and get them ready for to go into their units. And we could, known people, we knew the ones that could be useful and the ones that were going to be pretty awkward for most of the time. And the ones we also had, people that shouldn't have been actually brought along with the units, whatever. They shouldn't have been brought along. They should have been left at home. I remember we had one chap that unit used to go on parade first thing in the morning, and the flag used to be raised. This was the discipline. Everyone out when the flag was raised. And the time the band was playing, I saw this. We had a band there. Saw this chap walk off the parade ground. Nobody else had seen him walk off. I don't know how it happened. Just strolled off the parade ground, went to his hut. And I said nothing at the time. He wasn't my hut. He didn't belong my hut. But later on, I went to see him. I spotted him and told him, I said, you know, you walked off parade this morning. There's no one allowed off parade. And I said, lucky for you, I'm the only one that saw you come off. What's the trouble? And he told me that he couldn't stand hearing people shout. His head went all wrong when people shouted. A Scots lad he was. So I had a chat to him and realised that there was a definite trouble there. And I walked along and had a chat with the adjutant, Kingsley Foster, great chap. And I explained to him that this chap had walked off parade. I didn't want him charged. I'd had a talk to him, and there was no sense in sending him back on parade. He was just useless. So he asked me what I thought we could do. We had the opportunity of rejecting him, but if the chap didn't want to be rejected, maybe it was, you know, maybe in a slur for to be rejected from the service. And I said, well, why not put him in the quartermaster's stores? We're short of people there with the intake coming in, having to be measured up and such like. And he did. He put him in the quartermaster stores. And he was still there when I left Hardwick. He was still in the quartermaster stores and enjoying his job. And they liked him in there.
Just a point. Kingsley Foster, he was the same adjutant as you'd had with the 5th.
That's right. He was with the 5th. And he was at Hardwick, you see. He was the one that had been sent to Hardwick for the intakes.
You also, I think, trained the Home Guard. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, Hardwick, we had a finishing time. We had a starting time, we had a finishing time. We used to always finish at 5 o'clock at Hardwick Camp. You'd always finish there then, into your huts. And the evening was your own. And the Home Guard at Sedgefield. There was the Home Guard at Sedgefield. And twice a week, I used to go down to that meeting. And take Lowe's gun and rifle. Used to train them with Lowe's gun and rifle. We heard a lot about the Home Guard when the pictures came along with the Home Guard on, shown as a unit that couldn't have done much, but quite frankly, they were a well-disciplined unit around certain areas that I knew they were a well-disciplined unit. They could have held their own if there'd been any invasion. I think they could have been very useful. They would have been very useful in an invasion. They knew how to handle machine guns. They knew how to handle rifles.
Were many of them ex-veterans, First World War?
Less. Quite a lot of them were the ex-veterans. And quite a lot of them had been officers in the First World War. Quite a few had been officers in the First World War. Or they told you they had been officers in the First World War. And they were very, very keen. They were very, very keen. But of course it was established then as the Home Guard. It hadn't been at the beginning. There'd only been volunteers at the beginning. They hadn't been formed as a Home Guard then. that had been formed as a volunteer unit. But now that they were home guarding, they were uniformed and such like now, made all the difference. They were soldiers. Home soldiers.
How did you come to leave Hardwick? You'd done the three intakes, and then it was run down, was it?
I got work. I left Hardwick when they were still taking intakes, actually. I was recalled to headquarters. I was only seconded to Hardwick. I was seconded wherever I went, actually. I was seconded to Hardwick. And I got a message from the headquarters that I was wanted there, and I went across. They notified Hardwick that I was required back at headquarters. And I went back to headquarters, and they told me that I had to rejoin the unit. I had to rejoin the Searchlight battery again. And the reason being that they were going to be moved, seemingly they were going to be moved from the area, and I had to rejoin them. And this would be the beginning of 1940, when I left Hardwick. And before the lads went overseas, they were ready for it then. It was around that time. And what was happening was the Searchlight unit were being moved. They were moving from Durham into Northumberland. And the headquarters of the whole area, that's the whole of the 5th, was actually at Low Gosforth House. And I lived in Gosforth, but that was the headquarters of it. But the brigade headquarters and regimental headquarters were spread right throughout the country. And my regimental headquarters were right away up past Annick, where my regimental headquarters were. And the sites were spread out around the coastal. And this was because of areas that had been made on the airport, on the Accrington. There'd been bombs dropped over Accrington, and they were moving the searchlights and guns, I suppose, were moving up there as well. And I was moved up there. And when I got up there, I was given an idea of where the site was, and I just couldn't believe it. Miles away from anywhere, in the middle of the Cheviot Hills, right up in, almost into the hills, up past a place called St. Cuthbert's Cave. I remember the St. Cuthbert's Cave well. And I was told that the reason for the site being there was that we'd one or two bad boys in the unit that were always defaulting, and that they were making this site a defaulter site because it was the most awkward site in the area for anyone to get to or from. No buses or anything from there.
What was the nearest town?
The nearest
village.
Place was Belford. Belford was the nearest village. And there was a public house at Belford, and that was the nearest. And that was a good 8 mile away. And there was only the one road, and there was very little traffic on this road because it went to nowhere. It wasn't as though you were moving from town to town. The main road was through Belford up to Berwick. And they told me that I had to make these defaulters into a searchlight unit, into an active unit. So I was sent, really, with a load of defaulters.
How did you set about it?
Well, actually, I got them on the site and told them what the regime was going to be, and that they'd been sent there as defaulters, and that there was nothing serious that they'd done, but that I had to make sure that they didn't leave the site until their sentences were finished. I said they'd been sent to me for a certain length of time, and the time that time had to be served, I was going to make sure that they kept to the strict regime of the site. And there was the usual grouses. We had one or two grouses, but fortunately for me, quite a few of the first ones, the first defaulters that came in, were lads that I knew from the days at Gosforth and Cox Lodge, days at the drill hall. I knew some of them. And one of the first ones that came in, I knew that he was a very active boxer. He had been a very active boxer. And that he'd also been a crack runner.
Who was
professional.
That?
Joe Timney. So got them together and told them that we're going to do and that we were really going to be a real fit unit. We're out in the hills, we had the opportunity of getting out and really working, doing a real job. The site was already there. They had no work to do on the site. And the only time that the searchlight could be used was night time, so we had the full day, and for that full day, we were going to do an active programme. And we started that with breakfast in the morning, straight away, a cross-country run. But we started them with walking first, 6 mile walk through the hills. One man left on the site. But I used to phone headquarters and tell them the site was not operational during the day and that there would only be the one person there. There was only the one person on the site. And I said, take them away myself and over the hills. Hiking first, got yours, got their legs broken, then got them on with the running. And we used to go for a run every morning. Every morning, wet or fine, we went for a run. And we used to see the same shepherd every morning we went, the same shepherd. And bring them back, searchlight drill, then a meal, then out again, and away again for another run, short run. Back onto the site, searchlight drill, and then into the hut, aircraft identification. We should be very keen on the aircraft identification. And then the rest of the time was their own. They could please themselves. We had a room where they could sit and read or anything like this. And I was going to make arrangements so that two could be allowed down to the village. We had a small village, just a few houses. But I already had arrangements made for people to go down for a tea on a Sunday and such, like a tea with someone. They were all defaulters. So I used to send two down one night, two down another night, and I had two going down to the village and they used to return. And if they didn't return, we'd be out searching. We would know where they were and have them back on the site. But they never failed me. They used to get on with the job and get it done. And I had a very, very fit unit. And these people coming in and doing that time, maybe a fortnight on the site or 3 weeks on the site or a month on the site, I was able to select. And I knew exactly what sites they were going back to. And I knew the runners, I knew the athletes amongst them. And the sports campaign was being started up again. We were going to have a regimental sports day first, a cross-country run. And I remember taking the lads for this cross-country run. And it was down in the meadows at Annick. The meadows at Annick, the pastures it was called. And took them down there and got them stripped. And the whole of the regiment were there and skated home. The lads skated easily won. And then the next thing I heard was that I was going to get a chance of another sporting event. They were talking about starting the regimental boxing events, tournaments again. And I could forward any names I knew, including my own, if I fancied going into the boxing competition. And I remember I entered a team for the boxing competition. And the fighting was, the Walker Drill Hall was where the boxing competition was held. And we won that. Our unit won the boxing competition.
Did you enter yourself?
I entered. And we all won our contests, skated home. And of course this pleased the colonel. We had the best cross-country team and we had the best running team. And then word started to come through when I was up here in the hills on this defaulter site that the unit was going to be closed down, that the searchlight unit was going to be closed down. Whispers coming when the DR came along. Heard this whisper from so-and-so, heard that whisper from so-and-so. And then we did hear that it was definitely finished with as far as we were concerned. And other whispers that women were going to take over the searchlight units. and that they'd already been trained with the searchlights, and that we would be given that up. And this was the beginning of the 1940s, and that would go into other units.
How did you feel about that?
We wanted to keep together, naturally. We would have liked to keep together. But when the list came round, it gave us a very, very big field to draw from. There was all sorts of units that were short of. And there was infantry we sent. A lot of them were drafted. I had friends drafted, the senior sergeants and such like, so drafted over to India for to train the Indian troops that were going to take part in the war in Asia. And they were drafted overseas to India. So they didn't get a choice. But the lads in the unit, they had a very big choice of where they could go to. Machine gunners on... We wanted the machine gunners on the merchant shipping and all this, that, and then they were all taking these from the army. And of course there was a new unit being formed, the RAF regiment was being formed, and we found that a lot of our NCOs actually drafted through to form the new RAF regiments. A lot of our NCOs went to form the RAF regiments. But I stopped with the unit and went into headquarters after broke up. I was with headquarters for quite a while till the end of the year. As the unit was breaking up, they were being sent off to different parts and whatnot. It wasn't all done at once. They were just dispersed. The stuff, the searchlights and everything were taken away, and where they went to, I couldn't tell you. But they reckon they had been taken over by women units. And I went down to headquarters, and I was posted to a course in Scotland. I don't know why.
Whenabouts would this be?
This was at this was the beginning. This would be just before the troops came back from Dunkirk, around that time. But just around that time, I was sent up on this course in Scotland. And I got the shock of my life when I went up there. I don't know why I'd ever been put on this course. It was an electrical engineers, as far as I could make out. It was all electrical. And of course I didn't realise till after I got there that this was a new unit that was being formed to go to gun sites and other sites as GL units.
GL.
Of course, GL, and that was...
What's GL?
The GL was a unit that could actually trace the planes as they were leaving Germany, leaving France, and trace them over the channel. The GL, big cabins with their masts at the start, and a quarter of a mile of netting, like a platform around them, netting wire, and they used to catch the signals coming from France, aircraft leaving and whatnot, and through the GL they could trace them right across the channel and notify our fighters when they were coming in, and this was just coming in at the right time.
So you were on the GL course.
So I was sent on this course. Now I have no idea why, because I had no idea of electricity, and we got a written examination. And I remember looking at the paper. I could read it, but I just didn't know what they meant. It was talking about amperes and voltage, and I knew what voltage was through having electricity in the house, but all the other names were just mumbo-jumbo to me. So when they gave me the paper, I just said to the chap that handed me, "I don't know anything about this." He says, "You've been on electrical courses before, have you? Or you're from an engineer?" "No," I said, "I'm from..." I told him where I was from, and anyway, he says, "You're being sent here." He says, "You'll have to sit the exam." And he says, "You're here." He says, "We can return you after the exam if we find you're not suitable." So I sat the paper and was useless. I don't think I could answer a question on that exam paper. I'll never forget it. And that night after the exam, strolling down to the somewhere up in Scotland we were, and I was strolling down for a drink with some of the lads, and I found that they were all from telecommunications and all this, the telephone companies and whatnot had all been brought in because they were used with electricity. And anyway, this chap that had given the papers out must have went and told them that I had no idea about electricity and that the paper was a whitewash. And the next day we had to go to over to a hut to do mechanical work, a project on charts. And here there was a major in charge of the charts that he'd put up. He'd put three charts on the wall, all electrical circuits. And I looked at it and I thought, oh, I can recognise an electrical circuit. I could recognise the electrical circuits. I knew what these were because I'd owned a motorbike when I'd been in Civvy Street. And I knew the workings of a car. And I'd been working on a searchlight and generator. And they had the same sort of units and whatnot representing this, that and the other. And I could follow it. I could follow the charts. Fortunately for me, he got up and he gave a talk on the various charts, and he turned around and he said, one of the charts is the replica of a chart on a gun sight, the complete wiring of a gun sight. And he says, following right through from the command post to the sound locator, from the, that's it, not from the command post, from the GL, from the GL, that was the new unit, to the command post, to the, from the command post to the sound locators, and from the sound locators to the guns. It was an entirely new system. Electrically from GL right through to guns. The whole system was electric through to guns. But I knew the symbols that were on the charts, and I was looking at the charts when we all went and sat down. Major came in, gave a speech. And he says, the second chart has a fault at the gun. He says, and the third chart has a fault at the command post. And he says, what we'll do, we'll have one of you come up and we'll take the first chart first. He says, this is the chart that brings you right through. He says, and I want you to just tell me how the electric comes through from here to there, from there to here, from here to there, from there to here. And I knew the various, what they call it, for the resistors and this, that and the other, because I'd had them on the searchlight. And here he picked on me. And I saw the I saw the people, the ones that had been taking us on the, something that were going to take us on the course, I saw their faces when he picked on me. Oh! This is it. But anyway, I went up and I started from the GL, a thing I'd never seen before, but I knew that the curtain, the signals came from there, followed the wiring through, took it through to the command post, followed it through from there, told them where it went through with various switchboards, through fuses into here, from there through fuses into the guns, and finished with the direction finders on the guns and such like. And I had never seen a direction finder on a gun, but the charts were telling you where they were going to, and I got it correct. And I could see the look of relief on the, the instructor's faces when I got through it. And he says, very good, very good. And I went and sat down. They must have changed their minds at the back. The instructors must have changed their minds and thought, oh, this chap can understand a little bit about electricity, even if he can't write about it. And they came on the second chart, and the chap got up and took it through from there. And then the third chart, he got me back again for the third chart. He says, you've been on searchlights. Here's the third chart. He says, it concerns the searchlights. And I went up at GL, and the searchlight was the first unit that it came to from the GL. And unfortunately, there was a fault at the searchlight. They weren't getting the juice through. They weren't getting the juice through at the searchlight. But they were getting the juice through at the command post, and they were getting the juice through at the guns. I says, so straight away, it hit me straight away, there could only be one fault. And that fault must be a fuse or a loose wire at the fuse box. Because if it had been on the main wiring, it wouldn't actually put them all out of action. Or if it had been before the fuse box, it would have put the two lots out of action. So I told him straight away that I'd check the fuses and I'd check the wiring to the fuse box. And I was right again. I didn't know I was, but I was. So they kept me on the course. They kept me on the course with a month's course. And they kept me on. They didn't... It was dreadful to be RTU'd in those days. If you returned to unit. Because if you returned to unit, they popped you off straight to somewhere else. They didn't want you. It would have been dreadful if I'd been RTU'd. I'd have finished up in India with Billy Bell and these people that had been sent over there. But anyway, it kept me on the course and I came back with quite a good knowledge of how the gun sights and everything were working from GL. Although I didn't understand GL, I had no idea. It worked on the same principle as television and whatnot, with spots on the with screens and spots on the screen and such like. But I had no idea of GL. And then it was a peculiar thing. I came down, I went back to Durham from this course. Went back to Durham. And when I was there, we got the first GL to set up.
What did GL actually stand for? Did you ever find out?
I don't know, but they'll know in the museum because the GL was a very, very... It was the first of the... It was the first of the sound locators that could get such a distance.
Electrical locators?
It picked up planes. It could pick up planes, leaving the strips over in Germany, picked them up according to the sound and could trace them right across the channel. And this was a very, very big improvement from the old-fashioned sound. Like we could only, on a sound locator, we could only get a plane when it came into your area. But do you see now that they've got GLs, much beyond my understanding, but they could actually pick them up in France. Pick the planes leaving France and trace them all the way over. I know exactly how many there were. They knew the intensity of the numbers and everything with this GL. But anyway, this GL came in and it was sighted. And the waiting of the engineers coming in for to put up the mat, it was termed a mat. They found a method of doing away with the mats at the finish by some sort of locators that they could, and they found a way of doing away with the mats. But these first GLs, they had to have a mat about a quarter of a mile around, net and wire. And I was given a gang, and we put in the posts. I got the plan for this mat that had to be put in for this GL. And we put in this mat right around the GL set, with just the walkway through for to get into the GL. And was the posts, all rows of posts with the net and wire from post to post, right away around, a platform net and wire right away around. And this was the first GL that I had ever seen. Must have been one of the first ones in the country, I should imagine, coming off this course. And
but you didn't understand how it worked?
No idea how it worked.
And you still don't know?
We still don't know. But if I had been an electrician when I went up there, I suppose what would have happened would have been I would have been in charge of one of these GLs, because that's what the course was for. It was to find people to take over the GL set. He was the chief man now on any side. The GL was the chief representative on the site. The people on GL were the people who controlled the whole site. And it was the same right throughout the country, at the airports and whatnot, where they put GLs. They were the people that were responsible for everything that was happening. Guns and everything were never fired without the GL. You didn't fire them without the GL. All your orders came from GL, electrically. Everything was done electrically from there. Could never understand it, but I worked on it. I put the first mat down on the GL set.
And where exactly was this set up?
It must have been... Well, no, could that have been? Because I remember there was the camp there. It must have been at Same Harbour or somewhere. I think it must have been Same Harbour. I was down there for a while because I remember we laid mines on the shore down there.
So that was the second time you'd been to
That was the second time I'd been down there. I floated around Northumberland and Durham for my service. It was a peculiar thing, being a Northumbrian.